Maybe boys thought knew that, oh, this isn't real. But I think that girls, because of how we're socialized, I really think that some to some degree or another, we thought that our boyfriends in middle school was gonna be our husband.
Hola, everybody. This is Lucilania.
Hey, what's up? This is Steph coming at you live.
And this is Sex and Sensuality for the Churchy podcast.
All right, everybody. So thanks for coming, for being here, listening, watching. We are on episode 11. Like, wow. Yes, episode 11. That was fast.
Oh,
and one of the things that came up in the last episode was just some of the unrealistic expectations that we have of relationships and how purity culture has, you know, caused it or enabled it or, you know, fueled the fire for those things that really don't help us at all. And so we thought, you know, let's lean into that a little more, especially since I am single as a dollar bill and he is married. And so we have he's a man, I'm a woman. So we have very different experiences. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that we both have a lot of those experiences about how we either internalize those unrealistic expectations or how we have projected them onto the people that we've been with.
Yeah, I've been hitting that. Still doing it. Yeah, <right. laughs>
I mean, you know, it's just like, it's like, I know. One of the stereotypes that, unfortunately, realizing, you know, stereotypes often are based off of some morsel of truth, in that they wouldn't exist if they didn't apply to some of us at some point in time. But like the unrealistic expectation of sex and a girl's growing up and thinking, you know, or possibly thinking that that meant that a boy had feelings for you, or that he wanted to be with you and be in a relationship. And how has that played a role for us? And you know, we go around thinking, oh, I gave him my body, and or he keeps coming back. And so that must mean something. And we expect, and maybe even sometimes feel entitled to, out of that expectation, commitments, a label, or that he's not talking to anybody else. Although we haven't actually agreed with
that. That right there, I mean, the label alone, I mean, I need labels in the supermarket to help me know what I'm picking up from time to time, even though I got the same, you know, look and color and everything. But labels are important, but they're not, right? I mean, we have to consider the context of these labels. So when I remember as a kid, and I'm not going to lie, remember ever doing the little paper thing that you used to flip in and out to get the answer? Yeah, like, do she like me? Do I like her? So innocent, right? It was so innocent because it allowed the child at that moment to just kind of like be in the moment with their feelings and whatever, you know, whatever that was. And the idea of a boyfriend or girlfriend at, like, you know, middle school or high school or whatever, it didn't really, I mean, it was heightened. It was a heightened sense of, this is my person, right? This is my boyfriend. Like, you just hear the word boyfriend, girlfriend. Versus now, I think as adults, when we hear boyfriend or girlfriend, it's like, I mean, you better have, like, ring coming next to that after that, because to even provide that label no longer has the freedom that I think it entitled people to believe that, you know, yes, this is my boyfriend or girlfriend, but, you know, we're in a relationship. But that's just it. Like, this is the trial period, all right? I gave you the trial card. This is about to expire in like a week or two, maybe.
But see, so, what's funny though is thinking about, like, the, you know, your experience, like saying middle school, right? Because I feel like to a certain extent, maybe boys thought knew that, oh, this isn't real. But I think that girls, because of how we're socialized, I really think that to some degree or another, we thought that our boyfriends in middle school was going to be our husbands. Because you think about it, like, a lot of us would be literally sitting there, and let me go ahead and just admit it. Lou Selenia, whoever his name was. I'd be sitting there imagining, what does my name sound like with his last name? And we really like, and I'm like, and I know, I imagine that boys weren't doing that. But I, you know, it's like, I don't know where we got that from, other than the fact that I know that now looking back, that again, that so much of purity culture, so much of society is telling women that their value really is either proven or shown by a man marrying you. And so we idolize the wedding, idolize marriage because of that. And so it almost is like, have women, girls, like both sides, like in a lot of ways, are we still acting out of our middle school version of what relationships are? Have we really got that?
If we were, it'd be a lot simpler. There's so much game now, right? There's so much game now. It's a game. We call it the game, right? And it's all about, do you call first? Do you not call first? Do you text? Do you, you know, show interest? Do you not show interest? It's like, there are manuals out there. People publish on texting, dating versus in middle school. Like, you were just going from instinct. And I think rejection was also a little bit easier to deal with. Yeah, it was nice when the guy said she didn't like you, but you moved on, right? Versus now, it's like, we don't want to hear the rejection part. We're almost willing to do anything to avoid the rejection, but still be rejected.
And you know, I think that's kind of... I wonder how much proximity had to do with that, too. Because, of course, like, we're older. You know, you have a kid. I don't know if your kid is at that place yet. And wondering how different it is for middle school kids now, because of the fact that there's social media that we didn't have to deal with. Like your pool was a lot smaller. You had school, maybe your neighborhood, depending on where you live, you went to the same school, and then maybe you had church. And that could be all the same. It could be different depending on where you live and your church and this, that, and the other. But nowadays, like, it's almost weird that the pool has expanded, and yet in some ways that has exacerbated this idea of not of being afraid of rejection. Because it's like, but wait, like, the world is your oyster. You could be dealing with you know, and then it's like, and then I wonder, like, even communication, I think about, like, you know, because we middle school, that meant like you calling a house phone. And somebody might be on it because they may not have kids. I usually do 18, but even for those of you, if you're watching and you're like under 30, under 25, you may not know that people actually had to pay for call waiting.
Yeah.
They actually had to pay an extra amount of fee for call waiting. So if somebody didn't actually pay for call waiting, you would call, it would just be busy. And you had to hang up and you had to call later in hopes that nobody was on the phone. And then you have to talk to somebody's parent, because in most of our houses, we were not allowed to answer the phone unless you were told to answer the phone. And so,
listen, I'll tell you, my mother was on the phone, okay?
Listen, or you had that mother, like, they were always on it. And so, you know, it's like the idea now that people are more accessible. Kids have cell phones. They don't necessarily have, depending on how the family is, they don't have to broker their relationship through being nice to the other person's parent. They have this email and DM and Snapchat. There's so many ways to communicate, and yet even still, like, there's just like this idea, I guess, now that we have more access, it's like, is it almost unrealistic to expect that someone's always going to be accessible because we have so many options? That people literally,
I don't like the option.
He can spend more than one day without talking to me, I'm done. All he got to do is text me. It takes 30 seconds to text. So, you know, if he can go more than one day without talking to me, then bye. I'm like, is that realistic? Is that unrealistic? What do you think?
Especially when you see the read, read and the date or the time, you're like, he done read my message and never got back to me.
Let me help y'all out. Turn off your receipts, okay? Turn off your read receipts right now.
Please. Please.
Ain't no read receipts on. You ain't.
Or even, I got ADHD. What's even worse now? It's even worse now because when iPhones specifically started putting in that whole focus, right? So if you're sleeping or driving or whatever. So now it's like, okay, so I saw the notification up, but am I not on that special list of people that get past
Listen,
the
how
notification?
disrespectful is it that you're like, this person has their notifications off, which I also turned off. I don't need you to know. You don't need to know because then it's giving you the option of disregard my boundary and send a message with notification anyway. No, you're not gonna know.
Oh, listen, I forgot what I was doing, and I accidentally realized that my driving notification would kick in because I think it was like a more of like a
Safety
hazard
thing.
kind of thing, you know, to keep you safety. But still, I don't want you knowing what I'm doing at any given time of the day. There are people responsible for that information that need to know, not the rest of the world needs to know. And I think when you say about options, I don't think the options help because the people who were in those small circles that existed around you, there were things that attached you to those people, right? It was either the sense of community, the fact that like you went to the same school, or like you had actual things that bonded you together to have things to talk about. Versus, yeah, could I talk to somebody in China? Sure. Now I have to really think about like what brings us together, right? So then that means that if I'm using a dating app or something, I gotta write down all these things, right? I hope that I say them correctly, and I'm filtering, right? And that person being where they are, I now have to go through an additional filter process because we all know what you put on an app versus who you really are in the real world, may be completely separate. And I think for us as kids, like, yeah, you saw somebody on, let's say, Facebook when first Facebook first came out. When Facebook first came out, it was people you knew in college, right? It was like, all right, I knew this person because I took a class with them, or maybe they're a friend of someone else. And yet there was still that more immediate connection. But the moment you go further out from me, I feel like it doesn't help. It actually makes things worse because now you have too many options, right? And you think you have to do something with all those options. And then go back to what you're saying about the purity. Well, if you don't find someone, right? So now it's like, well, you have the world as your oyster and you still can't find nobody. What's wrong with you? And that's damaging, I think, because there's, you know, ain't nothing wrong with you. It's just the whole dating relationship game has changed in terms of who we have access to, how we have access to. Like, it's kind of scary. I'll be honest with you. It's kind of scaring the psychological or mental impact it can have on someone in terms of their self-esteem because they think that, well, I reached out to this person, or maybe this other person I know is meeting all these guys or meeting these people, and I'm not. What's wrong with me?
Right. Look,
So I don't know.
so what it sounds like you're saying is like the illusion or reality for some people of so many options now is like, okay, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do to prove to me that I should choose you, that I should be with you? And if you're dealing with someone who maybe is not evolved or maybe even intentionally toxic on both sides, how does that lend to unrealistic expectations on the other person? Or again, is it, because maybe, and then I think it's like there's the nuance. It's like, is it across the board unrealistic, or is it, maybe it's unrealistic for me. I can say, you know what, if you expect me to communicate in a certain way, it would be unrealistic to expect that for me. Because especially now that I know where I would put unrealistic expectations of myself to show up in a certain way in platonic and romantic relationships, and it put a lot of stress on me. And now I know why, because I was masking. Because I was undiagnosed autistic and ADHD and have learned to mask over the years, which me, I'm sitting here trying to fit into some neurotypical way because the world is more neurotypical than it isn't. And so I thought that, well, I have to be this way in order to get chosen. And so yeah, and their expectations might be unrealistic, but where the harm came in was the fact that I was ingesting those expectations and putting them on myself, that I had to show up as this person, that I had to do these things. And I didn't really understand or even give myself permission to check in and go, do you actually want to do that? Do you actually want to sustain this over time? Can you sustain this? I never even thought about it up until recently, because in my mind, because of what I've seen, what I've been taught, what I've been told, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to endure this because this means I love them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm supposed
God
to
forbid if you don't love them.
Right. You know, and so it's hard for me because, you know, now, like, because now I know. And, you know, but then I also wonder, like, how much of my expectations of a man coming into my life now are maybe unrealistic out of self-defense mechanism? Or are they not, or are they only unrealistic to the wrong man?
Ooh. See, that's not fair, because are they always all the wrong men? Like, I mean, if you're not with them, are they not all the wrong men? I mean, like, isn't that going to be the case, or the wrong woman? Because, like, I and you know my experiences, I was definitely one who believed in the whole purity culture. Like, I you know, believed in saving self, you know, and again, at that time, the person that I was, it made perfect sense, right? It made perfect sense. But if I had to go back and have a conversation with him, I would say to him, Stefan, you know, I get it. This is how you are. This is your choice in this current moment. But don't feel bad if you find yourself in moments when you want to explore yourself beyond what the purity will tell you, right? And not feel guilty or shameful or, you know, whatever that is. Because at the end of the day, whose purity standard are we really, like, living up to, right? And I know for me, it really, I wish that there was a balance, right? And the balance being that, yes, I want to explore relationships, sex, sensuality, all that good stuff, right? While at the same time realizing that I'm still a whole person, regardless of the whole factor. Right. And that something comes out of it that can still make me feel good about myself, despite the fact that, you know, I'm maybe going against whatever the church may be saying about the, you know, or I can't believe he came in, he was dating that girl. And, you know, and it's like, let's just be honest. Most of y'all talk about church culture, they're completely opposite to what you tell your children to do and live. And yet you came out fine. But yet we, see, I got a little anger. I had a little moment right there. But seriously, I think it does a disservice to tell your children that, hey, don't do these things, because it didn't work for us. It did work for you. You met the person you're with. You have this great relationship. But yet you want to give this persona or this feeling that, no, we did it differently. This was, you know, we did it the right way. What's the right way, right? Purity culture will tell you that the right way is abstain. And for some, that's great. Abstain, if that's your choice. And if it's not, well, there's ways to be responsible as well. And I think that's the part that's kind of hard, is not being able to get the, how do I still be responsible in exploring sex and sensuality? Because the other alternative of just being pure doesn't help me in the long run, right? Because there are things that I will say that I wish I would have explored and learned about myself through that process. And I'm now, as an adult, I'm learning. And, you know, again, you can't control how life goes sometimes. But what does that say about, you know, the experiences we have and how they make us who we are? And then we try to hide those experiences from other people just so they have a perception that we did it the right way, right? So
I think there's something to be said about, like, how it would hit different if these adults in our lives that were teaching us purity culture would be honest about the fact that maybe they do believe that this is the better way, and that I can be honest about that because I didn't do it this way, and this is, and not doing it this way impacted me,
yes,
like this.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. There's also the understanding that it's like, why is it, I don't know, you know, maybe it's my autistic brain, but this, like, stuff doesn't have to be like all or nothing. And so you go from one extreme to another, mm-hmm. as opposed to, again, not learning discipline. It's like I saw, and I not quoting as I don't remember, but I saw a post earlier today, literally, that was like, we need to be honest about the fact that abstinence isn't going to make you a better picker. That doesn't mean that you're going to know how to pick the right person just because you're abstinent. I'm not necessarily saying that you shouldn't be abstinent, but let's be honest about the fact that that isn't teaching you. That's not the same as discipline.
Because discipline doesn't require work.
We have been taught through purity culture that girls specific more than anything. Again, you're one of the few men that I know, you know, for a very long time that actually, you know, wanted to maintain his purity. Most guys in church that I knew might pretend they did, but in actuality was not trying at all to maintain any kind of purity. Yeah, they didn't. They knew. Oh, they don't meet me. You know, or they did think it meant them, and so they carried a lot of. They were having sex and doing those things, and carried a lot of shame because of it. But either way, most of them were not trying to be abstinent. Not for real. And so, but again, it's like that, you know, was harmful. But again, like there's a lot, you know, and I say this, you know, because it was very much directed at us, you know, more so as girls, that, you know, we're being told that abstinence is the way. But then when it's time for us, you know, we get to a certain age where it's like, okay, well, I'm 18 or I'm graduating college, I'm 22, I want to settle down. Or at whatever point you decide to really seriously start dating, and you get through these like Rolodex of guys that if you look back, I'm like, that was just a whole long list of niggas that want shit. So what did abstinence actually teach me? If I actually was abstinent, what did it actually teach me? And, you know, I'm like, what did it actually, which is for me, like that was the beginning of like really starting to ask questions about sexuality. I've always been a person to ask questions, but about sexuality and things that I was taught. So I'm just like, okay, you know, the way that they taught it to us, which in my opinion is really like a lot of the reasons why we have these unrealistic expectations that every relationship is supposed to lead us to marriage. Like that to me is across the board an unrealistic expectation. So we are dealing with limerence and like completely romanticizing something that is not even there, that we don't have any, because again, abstinence is not really teaching us how to qualify someone. Mm-hmm. We just know he likes me, he wants me, we're in some form of relationship, and whether he's actually claimed me or not, I'm assuming that he's claiming because he's sleeping with me, and he might even be acting like or telling me he don't want me dealing with nobody else. Because I've seen people go through that where he's like, no, we're not going to date. You know, I don't want you dealing with nobody else. And he's dealing with all kind of people. And he also not claiming you. Not that claiming you means that he's going to be faithful, but you know, it's just like all these things. And it's like, at what point do we wake up and be like, wait, something's wrong here? Because I have the expectation that all of these, as opposed to, you know, I'm just getting to know people because that's life. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. Are they an asset to me? Do I enjoy them? You know, like, do they, mm-hmm. do we have to date and be in relationship just strictly to find out whether or not we're going to be married?
I would like to say that there's a difference between saying religiously the idea of purity, right? And masking that with, I just don't want you to get pregnant. And now be, you know, and now be inundated with this responsibility because I can't control the fact of what will happen when you do meet other men or women or whatever the case may be. So it's easier for me just to say, just be pure, right? You know, stay chaste. When in reality, what I'm really trying to say is, listen, I get it. You're going to have feelings. You're going to experience things. Be responsible. These are the ways you can be responsible. And I think that conversation is actually a lot harder for some people to have with their kids or with their family members or whatever the case may be. And then what becomes the default is, oh, just, you know, don't have sex. At all.
Well, statistically, abstinence-only education is not effective. in places where they are teaching about, you know, protecting yourself and providing said protection, there are less, it's less likely for them to, for girls to get pregnant. Abstinence, it doesn't work.
And it also
does not work in the way that they, that, that they claim that it will. Especially, I don't think it would work if it was, if it was more equal, that they were really putting it on boys, but especially when most of that is on, is the responsibility for abstinence is mostly on girls. Even to this day.
I was going
to
say that.
We're doing a little bit better because kids and teens and people are like, fuck this. But we still hear that kind of messaging. We see it, you know, in shows and, you know, it's like, it happens in church. It's not just church. But it's like, it's still in how we see that they'll find some way to make a girl responsible for her own assault based on how she was dressed or where she was or who she was with, or, you know, it's all those things. It's all rape culture, to be very, very honest.
I agree with you in the sense that when it comes to guys and purity culture, I mean, it's almost kind of like, it's an understated thing that if we're talking about young girls, women, and so forth, then we should be talking about the guys, and the guys should just know, right? You should just know that this is the way things should be and should be going. But we're going to put more of the emphasis on the young girls and women because, you know, it's just easier to do so. And if men actually, young men, took responsibility and just do the part that they were playing, I think it would help to, it would help to make the conversation a little bit easier, and the responsibility a little bit easier. Because what happens, let's say somebody does get pregnant or a woman does get pregnant, it, again, that conversation still stays one-sided in many ways, right? So it's either the guy's there and wants to support them and everything, but the actual, I can't believe you got pregnant, I can't believe you did that, I can't believe you ruined your future, the guy may have that conversation, but the weight of it doesn't, feels nowhere near as bad as it does for the woman. And then now you're left with, you know.
And I think that highlights an unrealistic expectations for guys, because it's like, it's the unrealistic expectation that I'm going to be in a relationship with this girl and I now have power over her and get to control her. Mm. And when you, if you don't, then that becomes a problem. That's when you get guys, you know, the red pill podcaster type dudes, whether they have a podcast or not, like the problem with black women, or, you know, those guys that, oh, I only date white men, I only date white women because black women are this. And really all you're saying is, I feel like I can control a white woman and I don't feel like I can control a black woman, because you have this expectation as a man that you're supposed to be in power in the relationship. Because it's not about love. It's about being in, you know, the dominant person. Yeah. And finding your value as a man in how much you can control your house. You control your woman, control your children, control everybody except your motherfucking self.
I'll leave you with this. I think I've watched enough movies to always hear, like, you can't control your woman, like, right? And you hear that phrase, you're like, okay, so, like, and especially when it happens when both of them are there, right? It's not just like, hey, you know, no, like, the woman's right there. And you can't control her. Do something about it.
Yeah.
It's a bad message to put out there. So.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to end, because it's realizing that even on both sides, because there are ways in which, in the unrealistic expectations that we project onto men, is our way of trying to control him, control the relationship, pushing them to commitment when they don't want it, is our way of trying to control. And so whether it is that you want someone who communicates with you every day, you know, maybe that is unrealistic for that individual. And that just shows that you guys aren't aligned and really, you know, on the same page. But where the danger and where it really becomes unrealistic across the board is when it's not about a preference, it's about maintaining control. And so we will leave you with that, to sit with that and really consider how you are, you know, out of, you know, self-protection or whatever, how are you trying to enact or maintain control and power in your relationships, whether romantic, familial, platonic, whether you're withholding, whether you're, you know, whatever the case might be, how are you trying to maintain control and power versus actually giving and receiving love? And maybe, just maybe, that highlights an unrealistic expectation that you have for yourself and for the other person or people in those relationships. And so thank you for joining us on this episode of Sex and Sensuality for the Churchy.
Yes, yes.
We are a couple of weeks out from Heavenly Body, Healing from Purity Culture course.
Yes.
You still have time to sign up on the website at www.theradiantsessions/workwithme. Look forward to seeing you all there. It's going to be a great time. And so as always, be as radiant as the sun, and I will see you all. I'll talk to you all next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.